Good morning, everyone. I am Wadid Ahmed, and today I have with me
Abdul Majid.
I hope you're all having a lovely, lovely day today. How are you doing today, Majid?
Good, I'm good. As always, I'm really great.
Yeah. So for
I'm just
our.
Lying. I'm not good. No, oh. I'm just saying. The business world never lets you sleep. Every day you wake up and you see 100 million stories about
no,
100 million
stories. To be honest with you, it does let you sleep. You just need to make the active choice to log in.
Yeah.
You need to make that active choice. But, you know, we're almost done with the week. It's Thursday today.
Yeah.
Man, I'm always so excited when there's one day left for the week. We have really exciting topics for you today. Starting with number one, Abu Dhabi has just recently announced in the Bitcoin MENA Summit Conference that they are going to host a $1 billion solar farm for crypto mining. Now, this is very interesting. And I know you're probably asking, like, you know, what is it? What does this exactly mean? So what they're trying to do is they're trying to build the largest solar-powered cryptocurrency mining farm. Now, Majid here is like very obsessed with Bitcoin, very obsessed with crypto. And I just know, like, how does this make you feel, Majid? Like, seeing this, this is crazy. I've never heard of something like this before.
Crypto mining, it's not a new thing. It's a very, it's as old as Bitcoin. Mm. The only problem was in the start, you didn't need supercomputers to mine a Bitcoin. Now, with the amount of Bitcoin that has been mined, and it's capped at nearly 21 million. Mm. After that, the algorithm to mine a Bitcoin, the cryptograph behind it, which you solve and get a Bitcoin, it will get so complex that it will become nearly impossible to mine any Bitcoin after that. Because you will need super, super, super computers.
Mm.
Reminds me of Google's new chip, Willow.
Yeah,
so
I heard
maybe
of it
that may come into play, but it's still a very, very new idea, the chip, and let's see what it does.
And basically, it's going to leverage the UAE's abundant renewable energy resources to basically address the energy-intensive nature of cryptocurrency mining, particularly for Bitcoin. So basically, for the first phase, it's proof of a concept worth $10 million with capacity between 50 to 100. And it's just the future plan is that they're trying to invest $1 billion into this, and that the timeline is that they're gonna start constructing in 2025.
Yeah, and you need a lot of energy to mine a crypto coin now, and it's not even Bitcoin. There's a lot of other currencies which have mining capabilities. You can mine them. They're not regulated by a body or by a company. It's a very minor difference, to be honest. Bitcoin was created on the back of a cryptograph and blockchain. A company, like, for example, if I have a company, I can just launch a cryptocurrency and say, oh, I'll only float 50 million of it. So that way I know 50 million is there. You don't need mining. You can just buy and sell it. But with Bitcoin, you have to mine it, literally mine it using computers. So, yeah, this, to be honest, is a very long debate on a lot of crypto miners going to countries with lesser energy cost. So they're going to Venezuela, they're going to colder countries because you need to keep the system, the servers cooler.
I never knew this.
Yeah, so yeah, opens up a whole plethora, like a whole box of information. But the main idea here is that UAE, not only in AI, but in crypto, every new technology that we see is becoming mainstream. They're trying to get their hands on it some way or the other. They're trying to become a part of it some way or the other. And this mining farm.
And not just that, I think especially with the UAE just recently, we've discussed how, you know, they're going to make the Dubai specifically a walkable city.
Yeah.
So we can see that they're really putting the work in.
Yeah.
You know, they have all these initiatives. They have all these new initiatives.
Yeah.
I can't lie to you, Majid. I've never heard of crypto mining. This is the first time I've heard of this. So the fact that this it's happening, they're not just bringing traditional concepts in, but they're bringing new concepts in. It gives me so much hope for the future because I will not lie to you. I am an environmentalist. It does scare me sometimes. It scares me because it's like one second, I feel like we're all worried about climate change and we're very aware of it. Like, remember the heavy rain last year?
Yeah.
Man, that was crazy. That was so, it's like when you have like events like these, like you're very hyper aware of like what's going on, like, okay, we need to do something because I do try to be more sustainable. But then suddenly I feel like everybody forgets and they just like move on. But then projects like these, initiatives like these, they really bring the focus back in. You know, they remind people that, like, you know, we still need to achieve this goal.
Yeah.
I don't really have hope for the planet, though, in that regards. Not really.
Can't really say anything, but we should try our best to keep the future generations in our mind
when doing anything. Do you think humans make a difference, though? I don't think they do.
Yeah, they do.
I think it's industry.
It's all human-created pollution and all the stuff that we've done over, like, last 5-10 decades.
No, when I say human, I mean, like, for example, like, me choosing to, like, actually recycle my things. Like, I mean, like, me, the person.
I think one by one, everyone can make a difference, I believe. It's like saying that every drop in the ocean is important. So, likewise, every person's contribution is important. But obviously, at the nation-state level and the country level, we need to have policies as well. Yeah. Talking about solar farms, already UAE has a lot of stuff going around solar energy. There's the Al Dhafra Solar Park. There's the Mohammed bin Rashid Solar Park. They're already there. So, they've already seen, and it's a very high, sunny area in the UAE. You know, it's a desert, so there's a lot of sun and there's a less rain. So it's the prime opportunity here to open any solar farm. What I find interesting, my point of view on all of this, the thing that you were talking about, that suddenly the thing, you see an announcement and it's so futuristic, you can't even imagine in your mind that how they will do it. But also at the same time,
it's not even how they can do it. I feel like people really don't care about climate change. I just, you know what I mean? In the UAE specifically, they do. You know what I mean? We see it in the clean streets. It's very clear.
Yeah.
It's just, in that regard, I'm just like really afraid that when people will start caring, it's going to be too late.
It's always too late. I've seen, if you read the history of the world, we've been quite reactive as humans. When something happens, we usually react
to it. Greta Thunberg.
Yeah.
I love her.
There's no proactiveness. But in this region, what I've seen, they are very proactive with a lot of stuff. They already know, decide, do the research, do the work, and find out that whatever we're doing now, what effect it will have after 10 or 20 years. And they devise policies around the future as well.
Yeah.
We recently had a future conference in the one I went to at the Museum of Future. It was all about future, not even like technological future.
I love museum
psychological,
of the future.
Yeah,
I'll never get bored of it.
How will psychology help us prepare mentally for the future?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of stuff going on.
Imagine, you know, you mentioned something just a while ago. You said something that's going to be located in the desert. And it got me thinking about the desert. It's like there's this thing happening this week, by the way. It's called Liwa.
Yeah.
You know, I've never heard of it before. Basically, I went to my best friend and I'm like, man, like, I know, shocker, please don't judge. I've never, like, done a campfire at the desert.
I have not even. Yeah.
And by the way, I live beside the desert.
Ah.
Damak Hills too.
Yeah.
Imagine, it's sitting right there. It's at my backyard and I've never been. And I was telling her, I was like, oh my God, can we please go? Because she's Emirati. And I'm sorry, nobody does it best like them.
Yeah.
You know, she was even showing me the videos. Like, they literally make the kapsa in the desert, Majid.
Oh,
like,
nice.
She was showing me her cooking, like, making the karak, and she was telling me, like, what? Like, nobody does the sit-downs and the food like us in the desert. I'm like, you know what? You be the first to take me, because I really want to go. And then she told me about Liwa, and I was so shocked.
Yeah.
So, basically, Liwa 2025, it's something that they do every single year, and it's in the desert, and it's a bunch of shops that are opened, and there's even going to be, like, Bloomingdale's.
Yeah.
I was so shocked.
It's
not even like a, you know, small kiosks, which, you know, unknown brands kind of thing. It's actually like, it's legitimate. And I was just really shocked. Like, this is all going to be placed in the desert.
Yeah. Everything happens here.
Have you ever gone, Majid?
No, I've read about it. We had something on Love in Dubai about it. So I read about it. And what I see, it's the season.
It is.
It's the season for everything.
But it's just
and
so
as soon
cool.
as temperatures cool down, they try to get everything done. Open air festivals, everything that can be done in the winters is being done.
But in the desert, I do believe it, by the way. I just really have to see it with my eyes.
No, I don't know. I've never been to a festival like this, but I know about there's places where there's camps, there's like small, I won't call them resorts, but there's services like you can go, there'll be a camp ready and everything. So I know about that people
is,
go and enjoy.
Even when
it's
I'm
on the Dubai Bling as
is,
well.
It is. Even when I'm on the way home, actually, I always see this, I think it's a hotel or resort. It's called Terrasolis. Mm. I always see it on my way home. And it's like just in the middle of the desert. And it's like, I want to go one day because I'm like, you know, like, is it luxurious from the inside? Because outside, I'm just seeing a bunch of rubble and sand. So I'm like, how does it look in the inside? But I just...
Not even like full concrete buildings. I don't remember exactly where I heard this or who told me about this. But there's like services which set up everything for you. You just drive there. You'll have a camp ready. You'll have the food ready. You just enjoy the desert
time. I saw something like that. I saw like a deal. There was this one company. It's like for, I believe it was like 1,600 dirhams. They'll set up the entire thing for you. They'll give you, what's it called? 3 flasks of karak. You know, you can get a discount because it's the winter. I'm used to seeing them. It's just for me, like, the second I heard Bloomingdale's was going to be there, that's kind of when it caught my attention, because I was like, oh, like, this is not just... Because, you know, obviously when you go to fairs, you're always seeing very niche shops nobody knows about. You know, they're not that profitable. But to see that, you know, such high luxury retail brands are there, that's how you know it's big.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, yeah. Solar farm coming to the UAE, the biggest solar farm. They've signed a deal and it'll help with crypto mining, because crypto mining needs a lot of energy. So we'll see that. Apart from that, what do we have?
And for our second topic today, we're going to be speaking about one of the largest asset managers in the world with 11.48 trillion dollars. Now, BlackRock is eyeing Middle East IPOs for key growth with focus on AI and infrastructure.
Yeah.
Now, they actually, what they want to do is that they really want to publicly list here, because, you know, they're looking to expand in terms of AI and infrastructure development. So just recently, they've actually opened their regional headquarters in Riyadh. And recently, they actually got their commercial license approved to operate in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
And they're also actually seeking to get a license in ADGM as we speak. And
it is a commercial license in Abu Dhabi and ADGM, because everyone comes to ADGM in Abu Dhabi. The main idea is that BlackRock, with so much money, they are finally setting up a proper shop. Riyadh, the Saudi Arabia one, they set it up last year, I guess. And what basically they're trying to do is they're trying to take the money that is under them as assets under management, and they want to become cornerstone investors in IPOs. The main idea is that, for example, we saw Talabat. Talabat already had 3 big companies, the Emirates Investment Fund, the other two I completely forgot. But they had 3 cornerstone investors. So what happens is when an IPO is coming, for example, Talabat, they pre-sell 10% of their IPO to these guys. They get confirmation from them that we will pay you this much amount for your this much shares. So those are cornerstone investors, and BlackRock wants to become a part of bigger companies which will go for an IPO.
Aren't they so big? I don't think we've emphasized to you guys enough like how big BlackRock is. Like, you know, they're not just the largest asset manager in the world. That $11 trillion that they have, that only 2 countries in the world, China and the US, have a GDP that is larger than that.
Yeah.
That's how big it is. And they're, you know, they're major shareholders in a lot of companies. Like, for example, Microsoft, Tesla, Netflix, like any company you can possibly think of. So, and not just that, actually, their presence in the Middle East, it's not something that's, you know, just recently this year. You know, the owner and the CEO of the largest oil company in the world, Saudi Aramco, he's actually a shareholder in BlackRock. So, yeah, they are very powerful, and they are very smart too. And just to add on what Majid said, you know, this announcement, it's also coming up as they're planning this $30 billion AI infrastructure fund, which actually launched in partnership with Microsoft, NVIDIA, and Abu Dhabi-backed MGX. So we're really seeing how Honestly, when I look at this story, Majid, yes, BlackRock is big, but I'm taking a look at how big the influence of the Middle East is,
yeah,
and the UAE and Saudi
that
Arabia.
They want to come here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That they choose them out of everywhere now.
So,
specifically, especially in this climate right now, I think that speaks a lot.
There's a saying that goes in the markets and the business industry that wherever BlackRock goes, everyone should go. Because if they see potential in some industry, that means that industry is actually going to grow. And that is why they came here. So it shows that UAE, Saudi, not even them, this particular story is that they want to go for IPO as corner investors in IPOs throughout the Middle East. And that includes Egypt as well. We've seen a lot of IPO activity in Egypt. We don't talk about it really because the numbers are very small. But there is IPO activity. A lot of companies are going public in Egypt as well. The economy is facing a bad time, really bad time actually. But IPOs are happening there. IPOs are happening in Saudi Arabia every day, literally. I read at least one company at least planning or going for an IPO.
Yeah.
And the biggest IPO in the Gulf happened in the UAE. Talabat was the biggest IPO. And throughout the tech sector, it was the biggest in the world. So these things show there is a lot of room for growth for these.
Here.
It's not even potential. They have started growing. It's not even that they will start from zero and there is potential and they may go. They already have started it. And till when it will continue, that's the main question. And talking about Saudi Arabia will host the World Cup.
Yes.
This is the main thing.
Crazy.
That yesterday it was announced. It was 99.9% confirmed.
2032, I believe.
2034.
Oh, 2034.
So 2034 World Cup coming to Saudi Arabia. Again, we'll talk about it a lot more. But the main idea, if I want to connect it with BlackRock, is that till 2030, we have 100% assurance that Saudi Arabia will grow. Because sometimes people, when we talk about growth, they're like, For how many years?
When you get to host the World Cup,
how many more years will we see growth in the Middle East?
I think we will continue to. You know, it's what's so funny, Majid, is again, I was speaking to my granddad, and I'm not sure what we were speaking about, but every single time we take him out and he sees Dubai, he sees Burj Khalifa, he comes back home so baffled. And this time he was like, I'll translate it for you. He was like, Al-Arab, they're like khatareen. Basically, they're dangerous. Like, man, like they're unstoppable. And we're seeing it here. Like, you know, BlackRock, out of everyone, has chosen to come here.
Yeah.
And not just that, like Saudi Arabia, they're hosting the World Cup.
Yeah.
And this point specifically, it excites me so much, Majid, because I won't lie to you, I'm not a football fan, but I am a football fan when the World Cup comes up. When the World Cup comes up, you know that I'm going to watch the World Cup. So it's the World Cup, it's something that brings everyone together.
Yeah.
The entire world is watching. And now, like, what we're going to see is that the entire world is going to be watching Saudi Arabia. This is really going to get their name out of there more than ever.
Apart from the business side of it, some pointers that I remember from the whole bid and the whole process, there's two main points. One, Saudi Arabia got the highest ranking ever by FIFA's technical committee as a host, 4.2 out of 5. So
highest that, ranking to ever exist.
Yeah, by a technical committee, because when you look at someone's bid for the World Cup, you give them a score. Saudi Arabia got the highest bidding ever in the history of World Cups. So that's not interesting, actually. The interesting part is the stadiums are still not ready. Even without them, only on the basis of plans, they liked the plans so much that they gave him such a high technical rating.
Wow.
So that's the idea, that even on paper, the idea of the 2034 World Cup is so big and so nice, and it has a whole section, the bid document has a whole 10-page section on sustainability only, that how sustainable the whole World Cup will be. So on the basis of all that, they got a 4.2 rating. So on the basis of plan, when Qatar got the bid, they already had one or two stadiums ready and they had to prepare for the other ones. But Saudi Arabia, right now, they will build nearly
all
the
stadiums. But they have time, though, if it's 2034.
Yeah, that's the point. They have time.
They're a decade away.
That's the luxury they are enjoying right now.
A decade away.
And apart from that, the money, the capital that is flowing into Saudi Arabia, I think FIFA is hopeful that they'll do great.
It will
The one thing that will help them is the Riyadh Expo. because during Riyadh Expo 2030, everyone will flock to the country. So they will learn. They already are the best in crowd control.
Everyone is already flocking to the country, by the way.
The idea is for Hajj and Umrah, the kind of crowd control that they have, the people will enter from here, leave from here. So they're an expert in that, to be honest, in the world. So when Riyadh Expo happens, they will further polish their skill. And when the World Cup happens, you know hooliganism
and
football.
I'm going to start making plans from now.
Yeah, like, I think everyone should.
I'm thinking about it in my mind because I've actually never gone to Hajj. Inshallah, one day I will go. Imagine if I time it like beside the World Cup. Yeah. That is so iconic. That's such an iconic time to be there. But I don't know if that's possible.
Ramadan this year is at the start of...
I'm not sure.
Ramadan will
question.
Move a little
Ramadan
earlier.
Ramadan 2025. See, every year... It's starting in Feb 27.
2034?
Yeah, for 2025.
Okay.
2034.
Check Ramadan for 2034. You'll get an estimate date, but they're trying to make it...
2034, it's in November.
Yeah, so the World Cup is... They're planning it to hold it in January. So, because
That's
of Ramadan,
good.
Because the last World Cup that we saw in Qatar, in the Middle East, that happened in November, December, remember? So, because of that, they're planning it for January. It will clash with one Winter Olympics, but they'll find a way.
They always find a way. And just on the topic of Saudi, it's just been recently reported that 84% of employees in the UAE and in Saudi Arabia are very happy with their companies and they feel very connected to their companies.
Yeah.
So according to the Together 2024 Workplace Culture Report, it's the first comprehensive regional study of workplace culture in the Middle East. It actually, you know, it revealed this very insane statistic that like 84% of these people, you know, they feel very connected to their companies. And more specifically, key findings were that accountability was these were the top motivators for people. So accountability, 28%, achievement, 26%, and commitment at 25% is what was able to drive workplace culture and success. And actually, 72% of people, of these employees in Saudi Arabia and the UAE, felt a sense of belonging at work, while 59% expressed confidence in their employer's market position. Now, this is all lovely and everything, but I'm so scared. I really don't want more people. This will make the competition way worse than it already is. But really, like, just speaking about it in general, you know, I do believe this, Majid, because, like, you know, for example, I'm new here. I've just been here now for, this is my second month. I didn't even finish 2 months. This is like the beginning of my second month, and I am really happy here. So I do believe what, like, you know, people have to say that you know, although the competition is very high, when people do find jobs in the workplace, I do feel that a lot is done to accommodate for them. What do you think about it, Majid?
As far as UAE goes, I love the place. I love the work culture. The good thing about it is if they pay you, they pay you good. There's no taxes. That's the most important part for me. There's no taxes. You get no cut on taxes. The only thing that I think can be improved is to regulate the inflow of talent. They are doing a lot of things.
What do you mean by that?
I'll explain. There's so much talent flowing in. So much talent flowing in. That there is an oversupply sometimes. But I think there should be a regulated model which should be given to private companies to regulate. Just try it that if 100 people come in, you get to choose the best person. Because in this oversupply, sometimes the people who are actually talented...
They're not chosen.
Yeah, they're not chosen. They get ignored. So because of that, because of the crowd... that comes in, tries to find a livelihood here. Sometimes people who actually are the best person for the job, they get buried somewhere. So,
but maybe they're buried because they're not actually showing themselves. They're not actually letting people discover them. Because in this country, you know what I've really learned, Majid? You gotta get to know people.
Yeah.
You have to get to know people, say
networking.
Hi to people. Exactly, networking. But I feel like we drill this term into people's heads so much, but they just don't get it. Like, for example, just recently, because it's December now, I've gone to so many events during Q4, and always, like, on the, what's it called, on the planning sheet, it always says, you know, time for networking, like an hour or so. And I go around, I do talk to people, I love it. But I see a lot of people who don't.
They're just enjoying the food or like standing in the corner, right?
Not even enjoying the food. Like I remember I was at this one event and I spoke to this girl. I spoke to her because she was an influencer who came up on my page. She wasn't really that famous, but it was a familiar face for me. I was like, ooh, you're here. And then I spoke to her and it's like, I was so crazed by the entire thing because on camera, she had so much personality. But nice. Like in real life, it's not that she didn't have so much personality. It's that she didn't even seem that excited to, you know, talk to people and that, and she was really shy and she was really, I'm like, no girl, like get out. And they just sit at their table, you know, like this, like really pretty.
Do you
believe, and just
people should have the same personality on social media and in real life?
Okay.
Tricky question.
It is a tricky question because of the fact that, you know, there are some people, I do empathize with their case. They are very shy. Because obviously, like, when you're at home and you're alone and, you know, of course you're going to feel comfortable. Why wouldn't you, you know? Because a lot of, like, even my personality, if you analyze me from the beginning of the show, at when I started to now, it's completely different. Yeah. So it does take time for people's personalities to come out with people. But to be honest with you, it is nice when their personalities are the same online as what is seen in real life. Because sometimes it's like scary when you see someone online and, you know, you're watching things and then you meet them in real life and they're completely different. But of course it's not going to be the same though, Majid.
Yeah.
Because think about it. We don't deep it because we're watching a bunch of 1 minute videos and 10 second videos all at the same time. So we're thinking this is life. Do you know what I mean? But it's like, what's it called? Of course their personalities aren't going to be the same because the videos are giving us, they're just 10 seconds of who they are. Like, yeah. if somebody's lived, I don't know, 20 years, 30 years, that's decades of life we don't get to see.
Yeah.
We're just seeing 30 seconds, 10 seconds. So I don't think we'll ever actually get a picture of who people are. Do you know what I mean? Do you think they should be the same?
I think it should be.
Really?
Because some of the biggest influencers, I believe, they've always shown their real personality to an extent. Not
yes,
if, like, complete disclosure. What I've seen is content throughout the ages, even in my age when there was very scarce content, and now there's a lot of content. People who are genuinely like they are in real life,
and
they present their genuine,
well.
The relativity factor increases. People can relate to
yes,
that.
Yes, I agree
with
you.
The more fake you are online, the more, like, if you're always happy in your videos, no one is always happy. So people
That's
will,
true.
After a while, become like, okay, this guy is always
too
happy.
They're not incentivized
yeah.
to watch you.
So you need to have a range of emotions that everyone has in real life. On your videos, on your
but
content.
But it's tough
always.
To catch that all the time. So, like, for example, with me, just recently started my TikTok. Word Ahmed. Please follow it. I had to change it because I couldn't find my name. Somebody else took it. So I put a zero. But what's it called? I started my TikTok and I noticed something about myself. I am not recording that much because I do this thing where I only want to record when I'm in a good mood. When I'm in a bad mood, I don't want to get in front of the camera. Even though, by the way, that's why some TikTok creators actually rose to fame.
Yeah.
They rose to fame because there's this one girl, I think her name is Katie. She's a makeup influencer. She posts a lot, like get ready with me's before going to work. There's this one video, Majid, which she posted where her manager forced her to go to work. I don't remember, she works a lot, but this one day she couldn't, but they forced her to go to work. And her video was her doing her makeup and crying. That video, by the way, that video is the reason why she has like 4 million followers now.
Nice.
And she's getting brand deals in New York, all because of that. And she always reposts it and says, you know, the video that started it all for me.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think a range of emotions should be shown. But I don't know, something about being vulnerable on the media doesn't sound nice to me.
Yeah,
I don't want to do that.
That is one thing that comes with becoming a personality. Not even an
like
internet
it.
Personality. Even in the past time when people were movie personalities and there was no social media, there is a whole baggage that comes with becoming a publicly known
I know.
Person.
It's like I like
so
my private life.
You either
life.
Prepare for it, be ready to get it. If you like attention, if you love attention, go for it. Otherwise, if you don't like attention, you're a person who loves their me time.
But I don't think it's about attention, though. Like, for example, just
if
recently,
you love me time, you can't be a celebrity because
I do
celebrities,
love me time.
Yeah, so celebrities
I
will
do,
always be
but
surrounded
I,
but
I
by
someone.
I
also like speaking to people. It's
yeah.
like a balance is nice. But recently, you know how I went to Mega Campus Summit?
Yeah.
Majid, actually, one of my favorite speeches. It was, and it was so unexpected for me. I didn't expect to like it that much. It was Casey Neistat, and that day there were so many other people. There was Robin Sharma, there was Robert Kiyosaki, Randy Zuckerberg, all. very well-spoken, very dramatic, very, like, they really capture your attention. Do you know what I mean? But Casey came up, and he was talking, like, as if he was talking to his friend. There was no, like, dramatic pauses and whispers. Like, none of, you know, none of that drama.
He was Casey.
He was just Casey. And, you know, that's why I liked it the most, because I felt like I was just sitting with somebody, and they were just telling me something about their day. And I think that's why he also does really well.
Yeah.
His content is just so genuine. It's just him. So I think with what Majid just said, I think the good point here is that, you know, you can be someone different, but if you actually are yourself, you have a higher shot at success.
Exaggerating your emotions sometimes on videos and everything. I remember, I wanted to be an actor at some point in my life, so I read a lot of biographies and watched a lot of videos of big actors and their life. One thing always stuck with me, there was this one guy, sorry, don't remember the names, remember the story. There was this one guy who was into method acting, and he was trying to starve himself for the role of a man who was poor and everything. And then another one of the great actors walked past him. And the great actor, the second one, he asked him, what happened to you, brother? And he's like, oh, I'm preparing for this role where I'm a starved man and this and that. And the person said, next time, try acting.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But of course they do that, though. Like, for example, there's this film, it's called Bones.
Yeah.
Lily Collins is in it. And she was already skinny, by the way. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, Majid. She got overly skinny for Bones. It was so scary, but the movie was so...
Christian Bale did it for so many roles.
You know, I'd never watch the movie again, by the way. It traumatized me because of how skinny she was.
Bringing that story into this thing, that genuine feelings should be shared. You should be a genuine person, what I think does good for content. But sometimes it's just exaggerating for the fun of it, acting for the fun of it. It looks good.
A lot of the influencers I met at these events weren't the people they were behind the camera, and they're doing really well.
So they're good actors. They're good actors.
No, but that's what was weird, though. 50% of them were really genuine on camera, and 50% weren't. It was like a very fair balance. It wasn't like most of them were fake. So I just...
Maybe it depends on audience preferences as well. Some people go to social media to see stuff, good, happy stuff. So for them, those influencers work. Some people just go to find something relevant happening, which they can feel or like empathize or sympathize, something which catches their feelings in content. So it's, I guess, audience preference as well. But personally, my opinion, not an expert opinion, not something on the basis of some stuff that I've read, but I would want to watch a content creator who is genuine in both things. I should feel like you felt with Casey, that he's talking to me like a friend. Just, I'm on this side of the
Speaking
camera.
Speaking of content creators, just this morning, Love in Dubai, they had this TikTok influencer. Yeah. His name is Karam. And I actually watched Karam on TikTok. He's on his come up, I think. But it was so interesting because I spoke to him, by the way. And he told me how, like, you know, at first he wanted to build his platform on Instagram. But he said, like, Instagram is so difficult. And he said that Instagram is difficult. And this really, like, I paid attention to this. He said it's difficult and it's full of fake people. So I'm not going to get the interactions that I want. So he went, like, this year I started on TikTok. And he said, like, over time, like, I was talking, I felt shy. But then over time I was like, whatever, I'm just going to say what I want to say and be myself. And his TikTok is doing so well. And it's, by the way, I love Karam's TikTok. Why? Because he's so genuine. He's so genuine. And I know he's acting like himself. Even his video quality, like, it's not always like pristine, like insane. It's just him going about his day, showing us what he's doing. So
I've realized in the recent past I've seen a rise in vlogs where people are showing their daily life. So I've realized that content also works because, again, people want to relate to these people.
Not just famous relate. People are nosy. People want to see
They are after nosy. They become famous, they become nosy. But before that, if you see content from a creator who has hardly 5K, 10K likes, and if you see relatable content, you'll be like, yeah, I want to follow him. I want to know what he does. Maybe he does something that I do every day as well.
Or something
How does he do it? And how do I? Like, making karak, does he put milk first or the black tea first? Or... So all these stuff, relatability a lot helps a lot. Last point before we sign off about these content creators, I have a few friends who always, like, I never became a content creator. I don't know why. I don't want to go into that. It's just the celebrity status. But they always ask me for suggestions that, oh, this video, that video. I always told them one of the things that I do while reading books. I love a book where an author is having a conversation with me. I like
the
writing
style.
I like the writing style of authors who actually talk to you. They refer to you. So you think that kind of, that is why I love nonfiction more. Fiction is mostly about stories.
I like fiction more.
Salma said this to Ahmed. I don't like that. I want someone to literally talk to me from the book. Mm. So some of the authors that I read, nonfiction, they talk to you. So likewise, content creators should also do that.
Like a very old idea. People.
Yeah, people who love books.
It sounds simple, but
a good book is a conversation with the person who is writing the book.
Yeah.
So for me, that is the idea. If you want to be the perfect content creator, talk to people directly. Use you, this, that. Use personal pronouns more.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And
for your TikTok as well.
Yes, yes, I will. I will develop it more and be more consistent. Thank you so much for watching, everyone. This is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production under the Augustus Media Podcast Network. You can find our newsletter on Smashy TV, and we have all kinds of social media pages, anything you want to read, watch, or see. Thank you.